Welcome to Focus on the Community on WAMW. I'm Grant Schwartzentruber. Each week we focus on a topic important to our community. Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington. Well, I'm excited about this week. I know I say that periodically, and I actually mean it this week. I'm being joined by two local CPAs, Ryan Graber and Tyson Wagler, and they are friends of mine, and they are here to talk about year-end tax planning. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks.
First off, let's have you guys introduce yourselves a little bit. If I'm not mistaken, you were on the show about a year ago, maybe 50 weeks ago, excuse me, and you were talking about the new tax code. The tax code changed at the end of 2017 with some pretty significant changes, and the first change in about 30 years. So we're going to talk about big picture stuff. We probably won't focus on the minutiae. But let's start off by introducing yourselves. Tyson, if you'd like to introduce yourself and say who you are and how you got into CPA-ing.
Okay. Tyson Wagler. I'm a CPA here in Washington at Freddie & Wagler LLC out at 1912 East National Highway. How I got into being a CPA, just enjoy working with numbers. I worked at a larger firm for 3 or 4 years. I wanted to come back to this community and deal with people that you know, people that are friends of ours, and that you feel like you have an impact on and really helping them. So,
absolutely. Ryan, tell us why you're here and why you love numbers.
Ryan Graber. I'm a partner at Stahl & Graber CPAs on Walnut Street in Washington, and I am here because I, for some reason, do like to do income tax returns and help clients planning and tax minimization, I guess, and all the things that all that goes with.
Very good. I appreciate your guys' time. I know it's valuable, so let's get right into it. As I mentioned, the tax code changed at the end of 2017, so this is the first full year, I guess, that we're really learning some of these things. Maybe hit the high points. What are some things, and just in a nutshell, that are going to be different? If you'd like to start, Ryan, just some key points that are going to be kind of different.
Well, the changes were numerous. The high points are a lot of changes to the tax brackets, tax rates. The normal or the beginning rate, 15% tax bracket of old, dropped down to 12, and we kept basically the way that the tax brackets work, but the several of the rates have decreased. On the business side, or actually on the personal side also, standard deductions have increased. The standard deduction for a single is $12,000, almost double what it had been previously. Married filed jointly, the standard deduction is $24,000, and a lot of changes will come about there where individuals who normally may have itemized deductions can't do that any longer.
Okay. But is that necessarily a bad thing if they can't itemize? Maybe give me some feedback. It seems like it's going to move a lot of people into a simplified filing approach. Maybe speak to that a bit, Tyson.
Yeah, it's definitely going to make some individual returns easier for people, which was part of the reason for this change. In fact, if you look at the new tax form, it's much simpler now. It for a simple return, it's two
exciting.
Half,
it's exciting.
Two half pages will be a return if all you have is W-2s. And as Ryan mentioned, the increase in the standard deduction, so there's going to be less people that are going to be able to itemize, which again will make those returns simpler for those taxpayers.
Sure. And before we hopped on the show, I'd mentioned to you all that I'd heard that it was maybe 90% of people are going to go with the standard deduction and only about 10% will continue to itemize under this new regime. Ryan, do you think that sounds right? Does that sound accurate?
I can believe that. Another part that's kind of thrown into there is the limit on the state and local taxes that you can deduct if you typically itemize. So whereas Indiana's not a high income tax rate, and it can have an effect on some higher income people to where they're not able to take all that state tax as a deduction, and then they're kind of kicked out of itemizing as well.
Kind of an interesting question. When you said that, it sparked my brain. Do you think that there are, and have we seen states and municipalities respond to that change in the what they call the SALT deduction? Will they will they maximize what they what they're charging folks? Have you seen anything, Tyson or Ryan?
Not really. I mean, since we're not in a high, as Ryan said, since we're not in a high income state, we're kind of, we don't really hear a lot of that news there. But in the higher incomes,
East Coast, West Coast,
East Coast to West Coast, there, yes, I'm sure they're looking at that closely.
That's interesting. Okay, well, let's get right into it. If folks come in to see you, and we've only got what, a couple weeks left here, a little bit of time. What are you going to be advising them of? Obviously, it's different for folks who are receiving W-2 wages versus folks who are more self-employed or owners of businesses. But what are the things, what are some tactics that they might employ to reduce their tax burden for this year?
Yeah, one of the things, especially for small businesses, is purchase of equipment. And
is this why farmers all have new trucks?
So a lot of times at the end of the year, I don't know, in both of our cases here, we do a lot of income tax planning for people to figure out where they're at and whether they want to spend any money. And a lot of times that does result in capital purchases that, with the new tax code, the expansion of Section 179 depreciation and bonus depreciation. So those two things there enable you to, for most people in general, you can pretty well write off most of your new and used purchases.
And that's specific if it's used within the business, is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Ryan, what are some other things? If someone comes into you, even if it's just a, maybe they've got W-2 wages, and they've got a business on the side, what are some things that you might suggest to them?
Well, generally for individuals with, you know, just a W-2 income or a small business, you're going to look at, if they have kids, maybe a 529 plan. They can put in there and save some state tax.
And that's a good thing you brought up, the 529s. Maybe, so our listeners are smart. I got to give them credit because, and they're patient because they listen to the show. So I want you to explain why or what a 529 is, and if there's been a change over the last year, because I think there has been.
Well, so the 529 plan is it's a state-based plan, college savings plan, where for income tax purposes, the credit is basically 20% of what you put into those things, up to $5,000.
And so I think that's state-based, right?
It is state-based, yeah. Right. So for Indiana, we can save $1,000 of state tax if you put in that $5,000.
Correct.
The funds in that have to be used for college education, and you're alluding to that change this year. They allow you to use that for high school and elementary education expenses as well, up to a limit.
And it probably isn't a huge deal around here because we don't have, I mean, I think in the adjoining counties, there's only a handful of private institutions for K-12, but there are a few people that can do that. What about if they go to a public school? There's got to still be qualifying expenses that one could use the 529. Do either of you know?
Yeah, that is correct. It's just that the expenses aren't usually enough to make it, you know, really worth
it.
To yeah.
mess with.
Right.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so we covered, if someone is a, like I mentioned earlier, Ryan, they have a, they're a W-2, they've got maybe a business on the side. You mentioned the 529. What other things might they look at?
Retirement accounts are always a good thing to do. You know, on a traditional, if you don't have a retirement account through work, you can always do traditional IRAs, Roth IRAs, and you have until the due date of the tax return to fund those for the tax year. And if you have an employer retirement account, I always say to try to maximize any contribution match through work there as well.
Absolutely. And Tyson, if they're talking about retirement, obviously there's some things that you're probably going to be advising people of if they're 50 and over, if they've got matching, if some of these things, maybe explain those pieces.
Yeah, if you're 50 and older, you actually got a higher limit on what you can put into those accounts. And so, and generally people in that age range, you know, sometimes they have their kids out of high school and out of college, so they have more disposable income so that they can maximize those contributions.
You're saying the 50 and olders?
Yes.
Yeah. And really, is there any reason not to contribute? If someone's matching that money, I mean, they really, folks need to be taking advantage of that.
I usually try to, my individual clients, I usually try to get them to at least do, take advantage of the match.
Yeah, and be nice to your boss so he doesn't take it away, right?
One other thing, Grant, we talked about on individuals that we've seen some of in the past, and I think even though they increased the standard deduction, I think there's still going to be some people that are able to do this, is bunching of charitable deductions. To where
they do it all in 1 year, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like okay. They make a large contribution in January and then make a contribution again in December to be able to itemize and take advantage of getting an itemized deductions that year.
That makes sense. So this goes back to the standard deduction question, I guess, is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. For married filing jointly, you said it was $24,000, right?
Yep.
Individuals maybe 12,
right.
Half that.
Right.
So you're saying go ahead and do your charitable deductions in January or December so you can take advantage and maybe it'll bump you from the 90% that are getting the standard deduction into the, say, 10% who are itemizing. Is that
and
right?
Then the following year, if you wouldn't be able to itemize, you would just take the standard the following year. We have had people do that in the past, and I think with this higher standard, it's going to be there's going to be more people trying to do that.
Do you have a lot of people who are a lot of people that you're seeing, are they going to quit tracking receipts and quit tracking some of this stuff, or is it because so many, I've heard it's like it went from maybe 50% to maybe right 90%? I mean, are you seeing a change in behavior, Ryan?
Not a whole lot, but I mean, I know that there are a number of people who are going to just say that they're not going to worry about it anymore and make their lives a little easier.
Yeah. Overall, and we started out this discussion talking about the big picture, overall, it seems like we're going to have lower rates and a slightly simplified or simpler approach to the overall personal income tax approach. Is that fair to say?
Generally on an individual basis, yeah.
Would you say that?
Yeah, until we get into Section 199A.
199A. I think that's above my pay grade. I don't even know what that is. Well, briefly, what is that?
It is generally, and we, you know, like you said, we talked about this about a year ago. We didn't know much then. We know a little bit more now. There are just proposed regulations out there now, so not even official guidance at this point. But basically, for small businesses, there's a 20% deduction if it's qualified business income. And the definition of qualified business income can vary depending on the type of business that you're in.
Fair point. And so in this room, there's two CPAs and one attorney. And it sounds like a punchline to a joke or the start of a joke, doesn't it? But what does that mean for someone like a CPA or a lawyer or, a physician or a architect? Is there anything different?
There are different ways in which that is calculated, and there's limits on what is called a specified business activity, which we would all fall into. So professionals are limited to the amount that income-wise what they can go into that calculation for the QBI.
Gotcha. But are you also thinking – you said, I don't really want to talk about 199A. Is that because it's very unclear, right? I mean, it's not – we don't know
– We don't have – actual regulations yet or instruction from the IRS on how this
kind of the Wild West right now, huh?
Pretty much.
Yeah. I've even had instructors tell me that there are errors in the proposed regulations as far as the examples not matching up with what the wording in the regulations say. So yeah, it's it'll be interesting to
are they going to fix that in the next couple days here, or what's the plan?
I don't see it happening in a couple of days, but hopefully we have it sometime here in this winter.
So do you guys get stressed as you approach the end of the year? And when something this major, like the end of 17, when that major happened, and you still don't know exactly how it's going to go, you're going to start getting information from clients in a couple of weeks. Does it make you nervous? Does it give you concern?
I try not to get too nervous about it. I mean, we're all in the same in this together. So if there's not official guidance, then that's just the way it is. So.
That's right. All we can do is prepare it, and hopefully we don't have to amend returns afterwards, right?
Prepare and pray.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Okay. We've talked a little bit about business income, and you mentioned that 20% piece for pass-through entities. Why did they do that? Explain to me when they – we talked a little bit about this, if you remember, a year ago, but why was that piece put in A lot of people locally are self-employed.
Right.
Have a side hustle, even if they don't have their primary business. So why was that put in?
Part of the reason that was put in was C corps went to a 21% flat tax rate. And we don't have a lot of C corps in this area. Those are generally larger conglomerate corporations. But in order to put everybody else on the same playing field, they needed to do a deduction to get or otherwise there were going to be small businesses looking to form C corps potentially. So that was the reason for one of the reasons for putting this in place.
That makes sense. Do you see? I guess I don't really see. To your point, I don't really see C corps being popularized or being used that much because there's really no advantage to it. There's no use. It seems kind of more cumbersome than what it's worth. Is that fair to say?
Well, I think Indiana is one of the highest rated or highest number of S corporations in the country. I think per business or however that goes, but. Really, I've heard some people saying that they're going to look at in existing businesses and see if it's good to convert back to a C corp or change to a C corp to save some tax. But I haven't seen really anything that jumped out to where you know there's really any kind of benefit of doing anything like that.
Gotcha. So urine stuff. I mean, we're going to have to kind of start getting wrapped up here. We've got 3 or 4 minutes, but I want to know if someone comes to you, they're just plain Jane. W-2 wages, so just an employee. You talked about a few things. I mean, are you suggesting to them should they turn a hobby or something that they're interested in? Should they start their own business?
Well, one thing about having a small business on the side, there is an entity called TASC that sets up. It's called Agribiz or Biz Plans, where if you have a small business, no employees, you can employ a household member. And it's kind of a complicated deal, but you can functionally deduct medical expenses through that route. So that's one benefit we see with small businesses.
Sure. You telling people to form businesses? What are you doing, Tyson?
Yeah, I mean if they have something that they enjoy doing that's they're making money on, then they usually. We usually try to have them form an LLC in most cases.
Sure. It seems like it's just really hard to avoid paying tax if your only source is the W-2, it's just hard to get around it. I mean, maybe you've got some, I don't know, do they still do unreimbursed business expenses? Is that still a thing under the... So you've got
no, you can't.
Oh, you can?
That's changed.
Oh, it has.
Yeah, that was part of the Trump tax law. So
you've got a handful of things that you could do. Maybe you can't do them now. It just seems like it's harder and harder to do much to avoid paying taxes. So I guess maybe you guys need to start telling people to start their own businesses and got your office deductions and your cars and all sorts of things.
We can do that. It helps keep us busy.
Sure. So. Let me ask you this: Does it make it less valuable to have a CPA on call, or is it still important to stay in touch with your CPA?
I think it's very important to stay in touch with your CPA throughout the year, so not just to wait till December 19th to call and say, "Hey, here's what we have." So, but,
sure. Says the CPA. What about the other CPA?
In Ryan and I's businesses, I mean, we deal with people that we deal with. Year-round, so it's not just a once-a-year thing in most cases. So, yeah, we even from somebody who has a simple return, we're still hearing from them throughout the year because they usually have different odd and end things going on. So
right. So we've got, again, just a little bit of time to wrap up. I'm going to give you both a couple of seconds just to summarize year-end changes, where we're at, what you might advise someone, your typical client, the 80th percentile, right? Your normal person that comes in. What are you telling them to do here year end, Ryan?
Well, one thing to think about was early in this year, whenever they've summarized the new tax brackets, they changed the withholding rates. So some people might be filing their income tax return this year and finding out that their withholding decreased based on that. So it's something that they'll want to look at soon, early this in 2019, to make sure that they're covered and that they don't get stuck owing tax.
Yeah, I agree with exactly what Ryan said. You know, it was a decrease in tax in most cases. However, in some cases they're already have gotten that money throughout the year, and maybe even gotten more than they should have. So their refunds could actually be less than they normally have been. So they really just need to, you know, when they get their information together, they just need to, you know, get a CPA to prepare it.
Gotcha. It seems like the change in the tax code has been moderately unpopular in the national news. I mean, how do you guys view it? Do you view it as a good, bad, just something that happened, or what do you think?
I think it's going to be great for everybody's pocketbooks. It seems like I don't know if I can count on one hand how many people I've seen where it's going to impact them negatively. I mean, as far as owing more tax.
It won't increase their taxes. Okay.
Not that I've seen.
Yeah, I agree with what Ryan said. I have seen very few cases where it increased tax. There's some that are neutral, but in most cases, it's a decrease in tax. But again, they've been getting that money throughout the year and increased paychecks in a lot of cases.
Very good. I appreciate you guys coming on. You did a phenomenal job. Ryan Graber, Tyson Wagler, both CPAs. Gentlemen, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Grant.
Thank you.
Focus on the Community is sponsored by First Federal Savings Bank in Washington. You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's show tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. on 4-Star Country, the General 95.9 and 101.3 FM, 1580 a.m. You can listen to or download a copy of today's program and past shows by visiting WAMWAMFM.com. I'm Grant Swartzentruber, inviting you to tune in every weekend to WAMW as we focus on the community.